Skills in scientific communication and an understanding of the academic publishing process are valuable for resident physicians, whether they seek to regularly publish as physician scientists or better understand scientific literature and evolving practice. In this episode, Dr. Yuri Jadot, Associate Program Director of the Stony Brook University Residency Program and Editor-in-Chief of the Open Access American Journal of Preventive Medicine Focus, shares insights on how to help residents develop essential skills in scientific writing and publishing.
So my name is Yuri Jadot. I am currently the Associate Program Director for the Residency Program at Stony Brook University, where I'm an assistant professor on a tenure track. I wear lots of hats at Stony Brook, so we won't go into that. But in short, really, I see patients in the hospital's employee health service and the telepreventive medicine service. I help teach the residents, different courses for the residents, including two MPH courses. And I also do research, and I recently was appointed to be the editor-in-chief of AJPM Focus, which is the new fully open access journal of APTR and ACPM. So those are my hats that I wear currently.
It's quite a lot of hats. Yeah. So given your kind of extensive background with research and publication, why is it important for residents to engage in research? You know, what do they gain from that experience, especially so for residents who see themselves working in a more public health administrative role or in a more clinical role and aren't necessarily as interested in academic medicine?
Yeah. So that's a great question. And, you know, I'm going to reframe the question a little bit because, you know, the term research sometimes tends to scare people off, right? So one of the ways I like to approach this concept of, you know, research, learning how to do research and whatnot is to think of research and scholarship, right? That's sort of how I think of how we should be approaching residents who really many of them will not, in fact, conduct research in the traditional sense, right? But research and scholarship, we're all involved in some kind of scholarship. So what does that mean? So research typically, you know, you're talking about things like that involve the scientific method, where you may be conducting an experiment, if not experiment, at least a prospective cohort type of research design. Some people do qualitative research or mixed methods research or other kinds of research, but really fundamentally it's you're using the scientific method to test out some theory or to uncover some aspect of a given phenomenon. And that's fantastic for those of us who want to work in that realm. But many don't, right? So for example, you know, residents who plan on working in a public health setting, they may never conduct research, right? But they do interventions in their communities that ought to be documented in a scholarly way so that other, you know, either researchers or policymakers, public health professionals know what works and what doesn't work, how well it worked, did it meet the needs of the community, right? So these are all things that, you know, a resident, once you graduate, you need to be able to document your scholarly work in a way that can help inform practice, can inform future research, even if you won't be the one conducting the research, but you should be able to inform what others are doing. And so it's extremely important for preventive medicine physicians to, you know, hit the ground running and know how to do research and scholarship and how to write, especially for publications, which I guess we're going to get into at some point a little later.
And your role kind of as an editor and the particularly like the writing skills and I think broadly the communication skills that are so essential for physicians who might be wanting to go work in public health. What are you looking for in kind of the communications of research and scholarship? What do you think that, young physicians and residents do really well? And where do you see as areas that, you know, residency directors should be careful to work with their students on and their residents on really improving their kind of communication and publication skills?
What have I seen that the residents do really well? I think one of the things that residents do really well is the residents tend, maybe it's because of their youth or whatnot, not that I'm that much older, but really younger people often are very, very motivated and sort of willing to sort of at least take a leap of faith, right? Sometimes, you know, many of us who have worked in academia for a while, you might get, you know, stuck in your ways kind of thing, right? Not, again, speaking figuratively here. So it's always a pleasure to work with residents and also medical students, but especially residents in our specialty because they sort of bring a fresh perspective to things, right? They might see something that, you know, you otherwise as a faculty member, you might not have seen. They might ask a question that, you know, you might not have thought to ask. So I think that aspect is a very powerful aspect that c- comes about when you work with residents, especially whether they're experienced or not in research, it doesn't really matter. I mean, all residents tend to do this. Of course, the resident has to have some interest, some intellectual interest in research or scholarship. If they don't, then obviously you wouldn't get that sort of that vibe from them. But that's also, that's a big positive when working with residents. What is it that they don't do so well? So the same youth factor that makes them pleasant to work with in terms of new ideas and whatnot and questions is also a potential limiting factor in terms of, you know, they're not aware of how you should write for publication and they have to learn. And so, you know, you have to be patient as a mentor to help them learn, right? That's what you have to do. And you know, if nobody gets into this business of either program directing or faculty member if you're not willing, or at least you don't plan to being patient and whatnot. So that's a core skill that we have to develop as faculty in order to help our residents get to where they need to be from a intellectual standpoint. Now, what other things that they need to work on? I mean, writing, definitely, right? So how do you write? I mean, writing colloquially versus writing for publication are two very different things, right? There's also, you also have to keep in mind, you know, the residents will have to learn that depending on what kind of research or scholarly writing you're doing, there are certain methodological things that have to be reported, right? So what you write, when describing an RCT, a randomized control trial, is not going to be the same thing that you write when you're describing a prospective cohort study or when you're describing a qualitative research study, right? And I mean, these are all things that it takes time to learn those things. Fortunately, you know, we have tools at our disposal, which I guess we can talk about at some point, to help residents learn those tools. But, you know, recognizing that there are differences methodologically, which then influence how you're writing, what kind of writing you use to report your research or scholarship. I think that's a key point that residents need to recognize and continually need to learn.
When you're reviewing a manuscript, what excites you about a manuscript? Like when when you're first reviewing the cover letter or reading through the abstract, what are kind of the things that catch your eye that as an editor really, really energize you? And then I guess, you know, how do program directors kind of identify and nurture residents working in research that creates that feeling?
So in terms of what energizes me, I'm a physician, but I'm also trained as a social scientist. Right, so I did a PhD in urban health, which is really the way I describe it to people is like public health for cities, meaning, you know, not just the, you know, public health traditionally, but also understanding the sociology of how human beings interact with each other as individuals or groups, understanding how, you know, the physical environment, and, you know, frames what we do as human beings, whether it's with each other or to each other. I'm probably a little bit different than other associate program directors or other faculty in medicine in that I have social science research training, right? Many physicians have basic science research training, right? So, you know, neurosciences, cardiovascular sciences, oftentimes, you know, it's lab work with animals and whatnot, which has a huge value. In fact, I'll go off on a slight tangent on that one. I think, you know, basic sciences are often disconnected from our specialty. And one of the things that I'm working on as the new editor-in-chief of AJPM Focus is bringing back a focus on basic sciences, at least as long as it's relevant to the prevention realm, right? So, and I think there needs to be a place where that kind of evidence, you know, comes to the forefront. So it doesn't have to end up in, say, another journal that people in our specialty are not necessarily reading. Anyway, back to the point that I was making. So I think that for me, when I see any manuscript that's submitted, and again, in fairness, I'm fairly new to the role of editor-in-chief of AJPM Focus specifically. I have done editorial roles in other journals, such as Plus One. So I have experience in editing, but on a prevention-specific journal, this is fairly new for me, about 2 months only. But what I've seen so far, what I like so far is I like papers that understand how to frame a question, first of all, right? So if I read a paper and the question is disconnected from the analysis, from the methods, that's a huge red flag for me. It tends to make me think, well, are the authors actually paying attention to what they did? Did they actually do what they said they did, right? Because if your question is disconnected from your methods and from your results, that is a huge red flag. Now, we haven't had any papers rejected yet. They're all undergoing review at this point. But for me, that's a big no-no, right? So if you're writing for JPM Focus, please be very clear that your methods align with your questions. So that's one. Another one is, you know, I'm very passionate about making sure that even evidence that's not, you know, statistically significant or that's not, you know, a sexy evidence or whatever. I think that those types of evidence, as long as they're relevant for prevention, they need to find the light of day as well, right? And so that's another emphasis of AJPM Focus, is that we're not necessarily trying to only publish papers that are potentially high impact or, you know, have, you know, statistically significant results, because oftentimes, and you know, this comes from my background as in systematic reviews and meta-analysis, it's really important for the totality of the evidence of research studies to be published or scholarly studies to be published. Because if we're just publishing, and this is not a publication bias, if we're just publishing, you know, papers that have statistical significance, we are potentially biasing the evidence and we're going to make mistakes. Whether it's, you know, you implement a program that, you know, there are five RCTs that said, oh, it's statistically significant, but there are five others who are not published who said it's not statistically significant, who are of even higher quality. So we end up the public health system can end up spending $1 billion on a program that does not work, because strictly because the evidence from the five RCTs that was not significant could not find a home in any journal. And so to me, that is another huge red flag for academia in general. So I think these are some of the things I look for. I don't exclude any papers on the basis of statistical significance or impact. But I also look for methods to be implemented correctly and appropriately, and at least documented as such, whether it's as a limitation or error, or as long as there's transparency in the method and there's alignment of the methods with the questions, those are things that I look for. So that's part one of your question. The other part had to do with how do program directors nurture that kind
of... how do you nurture that kind of thinking, right? So like, how do they... Right, so a resident has a question. How does a program director then, I guess, help them identify what's the right way to go about researching that question so that their methods are matching their questions?
So the good thing about our specialty, which is at least on a systematic basis, is unique when it comes to research and scholarship, is that all, you know, the fact that an MPH is a graduate degree in public health, I shouldn't say MPH because that's not just the MPH, a graduate degree in public health is a requirement for a specialty, whether you have it in before training or during the residency, it doesn't matter. And I'm being very specific because, you know, someone could have a PhD related to public health. You don't have to do an MPH. So that's why I'm saying graduate degree. That's the official ABPM language. And because of that, the MPH is really what I call the intro to practice degree for public health as a profession. Again, our specialty has both sides. We're physicians, but also we're public health professionals at the same time. So the MPH degree, the graduate degree in public health, gives you quite good training in research and scholarly methods, right, and beyond, right? So, and that's the saving grace for us, in that program directors, as long as you, or if you're going to establish a residency program in preventive medicine, public health, you have to have an affiliated program or school of public health that will offer that graduate degree to your residents. Now, of course, there are lots of options online, et cetera, but for the most part, you have to pick an affiliate, okay? And so through that program, your residents will get, or should get, adequate training in terms of at least the knowledge component of research and scholarship. So I think that's sort of one of those systematic ways that, you know, program directors, once you set that in motion as part of developing and establishing your program, that sort of works itself out. You don't have to keep figuring out, you know, how to help your residents learn research methods and whatnot. That's sort of a standard template on that one. Now, of course, not all programs are created equal, not all faculty are created equal, but in general, residents will get the training they need in terms of that. I do believe, however, that programs should do a little bit more in terms of, if you really want your residents to truly shine when by the time they leave your program, from the research and scholarship standpoint. And, you know, I'm going to give the examples for Stony Brook because that's what I'm familiar with. That's the program that I work with. We do lots of different things. So one of the things that we do, which I think most programs do as well, is journal clubs, right? We have journal clubs. where residents each take a lead, take the lead in sort of reviewing a manuscript, typically a published manuscript, preferably in a journal that's of relevance to prevention. Definitely the topic needs to be relevant to prevention. That way it's, you know, has some salience for us, where they discuss the methods, they discuss, basically they discuss the entire article. One of the things that I've tried to do, at least when I take part, because the faculty also, some of the faculty members take part in the journal club just to be present with the residents and provide feedback. One of the things that I try to do is I try to challenge them to improve their critique of the research, right? So it's of the methods of the paper that they're looking at in journal. So it's not just, here's what the study did and this is what they found and it was interesting. No, that's anybody can read that, right? So really need to do is you need to look at the question they asked, look at the methods they used, and ask yourself, is the question aligned to the methods? Or rather the other way, because you have to have the question first. Are the methods aligned to the question? Could they have done a better study design to answer the question that they're asking? And if so, what would that look like? What were the flaws in the research or scholarly paper that you're looking at? How are those flaws, are they consistent with standard methodologies, right? Those are what are called the different biases. So is there selection bias? Is there, you know, a trick bias and so on and so forth? So in other words, getting them to identify the methods of the expected methods of a given design and how the study met that given those given, you know, thresholds of quality. So, which is, to me, that's what you need to be able to do as an independent physician, is to look at the research in the literature, research scholarship in the literature, and decide, did the paper address the issues that it should have addressed? And it's not something you can just learn overnight. I mean, it takes, for me, I've been fortunate in that this is another one of the hats that I wore before I became faculty, is that I helped to run a systematic review research center at Rutgers. And a huge part of systematic review research methodology is what's called a critical appraisal of the evidence, you know, looking at a bunch of research studies on a similar question and evaluating their quality using a checklist that asks you specific questions about, okay, how did they address attrition bias? How did they address selection bias and so on and so forth? And so you sort of develop an eye for what a study should have done. And if they didn't do it, did they identify that as a limitation of their study design, of their report? So teaching residents to do that is another aspect of what we do at Stony Brook. And it's not just through the journal club, which is what I mentioned first, but it goes to another aspect, which is one of the courses that I teach. I teach a course called Population Health Analytics, which is in developing what we call population health projects, right? So population health improvement projects, which can be in public health, it could be in clinical care, it doesn't really matter. It's about using the methods to help address a question. So one of the things that I do is I teach them about systematic review methods. So we actually do a systematic review as part of the class. The residents take that course with me where they not only learn about systematic reviews, how to do one, but they actually do one in class and we submit it for publication. Possible for program directors to have residents, so it's not just learn about it in the MPH program, but maybe submit an article, right? Even if it's as a group. Now, of course, it does require, it's labor intensive for the residency program, but if that's what you may have to do to really get your residents to a higher level.
What resources are out there for program directors who are, you know, I think you've shared some examples of like different ways with the journal clubs and the like that they can engage residents more in scholarship and research and building those kind of critical thinking skills behind what makes good scholarship. But I guess what other resources are out there, both in terms of kind of the more that kind of critical scholarly mindset, but also just in terms of like developing writing skills and kind of more of the hard skills that might be helpful for residents to be directed to.
Yeah. So the writing part is always a challenge because that's, by the time you get to residency at that level, you should in theory have pretty decent writing skill. Now, you may not write in the style that's appropriate for academic publishing. That's one thing, an additional skill you have to learn. But in terms of the writing itself, residents should be able to write. Another fortunate aspect for program directors is that the MPH programs usually will require a lot of writing of the residents, right? At least a program at Stony Brook, every MPH course has at least one paper in it. It may not be a long one, but it requires writing. It's not just, in fact, the program in public health here at Stony Brook has mostly moved away from standardized testing, right? That's partly for accreditation purposes, because the CEF doesn't like standardized testing, which is fine, which is appropriate. And so through that, residents learn to improve their writing. Now, it might take some time for them to get to a point that is ideal, but that's a tool that's already in place. But in terms of, you know, the critical thinking skills, the examples that I mentioned are all ways that program directors can provide that structure for residents to develop their critical thinking skills in terms of research and scholarship. But there are others that, you know, you should consider. So, for example, you know, quality improvement studies or projects are a type of scholarship. Yeah. Right? They're not research, but they're scholarship. And so even if a resident doesn't want to engage in research, get them engaged in quality improvement. Which, in fact, at this point, it's a requirement for our specialty anyway, especially now that the ECGME, you know, is revamping or has revamped the program requirements. You know, quality improvement is explicitly cited as an expectation, as a competency, along with patient safety. It's sort of combined into one, and so that's already something that programs have to meet, and it's an area that almost all programs can engage residents in, and the trick is, you know, you can conduct a quality improvement project and never write it up, right? So the key is getting the residents to write it up. And so that's another area, Stony Brook, where we've also added a requirement to write up a report on quality improvement. We added that as part of our latest, recent HRSA funding, where we have all our junior residents. So we have four residents per year. The junior residents spend 6 months at the VA each. So it's 6 months two residents, 6 months the next two residents. And so during those 6 months, we have them develop a quality improvement project and conduct it and write it up. So it's a full cycle, right? So they identify the question, they, you know, develop what approaches they're going to use, what's the intervention, and they go on and carry it out, and they analyze the data, and they write up a brief report on it. Now, they don't write it for publication, but some of them have, actually. But most of them, they're not required to. But they are required to submit a report to the program. So that's something that I think is, I mean, again, all residents in the specialty will do quality improvement, but making sure that they write it up is an additional tool, an additional time point where you can get your residents to, you know, to learn more writing skills for scholarship.
Yeah, so it seems like there's a lot of kind of instances throughout residency, but the quality improvement project, but also maybe just in some of their rotations where they're doing work that lends itself to scholarship, and the difference is whether or not they're going to record it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's identifying those opportunities where they could take what they're doing and just put it to paper. And that kind of starts building those skills.
Exactly. And again, this is a bit of a plug for the journal, but it's related to what you're saying. So one of the things that AJPM Focus has tried to do, which is aligned with what I was saying earlier about, you know, wanting to allow different types of research and scholarship to see the light of the day, is we welcome quality improvement papers specifically, right? In fact, that's one of the article types that we have that we're seeking quality improvement reports, quality improvement projects, QI project reports, which it's very hard to publish those kinds of reports in most journals because, you know, they're not definitely not research, right? So many journals only want research. I'm not referring to a particular journal, but in general, the top journals don't really want research. Sometimes they'll accept a QI report if it's sort of, you know, mind-blowing, high impact, sort of, you know, changing the world kind of thing, changing medicine kind of thing. But in Focus, we want those quality project reports for lots of reasons, one of which being, again, other programs can implement them. Other institutions can implement them. At least can identify how it was done and maybe do it better in their own institution. But it also now creates an opportunity for residents to submit those reports if they're not able to or don't want to do a research project, although they have to for the residency. But we want them to engage in scholarship that they will actually keep doing. And QI is a type of scholarship that most residents, when in practice, will likely keep doing. And in fact, it's a requirement for maintenance of certification for preventive medicine physicians to keep doing some type of performance improvement or quality improvement project during their 10-year cycle for their for preventive medicine board certification. So that's another avenue.
So yeah, it's a lifelong skill. It's not just something that you do in residency, you do in medical school, and then you go into practice and kind of drop it. Like you have to keep doing that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And most residents want to. Most physicians want to. And lucky for our specialty, you know, we train them in how to.
Is there anything else you kind of want to share about research and scholarship and publication that, you know, for a new residency director coming in to either an existing program or someone looking to start a program from whole cloth? You know, what else should they be thinking about as they're going through those early stages?
Yeah. So I think just key takeaways. I think definitely the point that I made initially, which is, you know, research versus scholarship. Make sure that as you, and I'm speaking to program directors here, as you approach sort of your research curriculum, it always include the scholarship component of it, because that gives you an additional tool to engage your residents in scholarly writing, right? So it's not just research. Research is great, but also include other types of scholarships. So that's one. Number two, consider not just having them learn the content from the MPH program or from a residency program, you know, didactics. I know almost all programs have like an academic day or academic half day. It's nice to learn by listening to didactics, but get them to do stuff, right? So learn by doing. Whether it's develop a QI, you know, we call it a QI activity in a rotation. It's not a separate rotation. It's part of their rotation at the VA. And we've added this required QI activity that they all partake in. So that's, we didn't have to, but residents actually have found it very helpful. Like by the time they're done with their first year, they're able to carry out a quality improvement project independently as seniors, which wasn't necessarily, it wasn't systematized previously. So figure out some kind of systematic way of getting them engaged in doing a QR project and writing it up, right? And sometimes it just means the program mandating it, right? It didn't take much for us to launch that, the writing component of the QI project, the QI initiative at Stony Brook. We just said, you will write it up. And they did. And now many of them love it. And many of them, we had a resident who ended up applying for a QI fellowship at Stony Brook, got it. And she's going to be leading, you know, a QI initiative at the VA. So awesome. There's stuff to do. Like there are benefits to, you know, having them go above and beyond in a way that, you know, you've mandated. The only other thing I would also mention is when you have them, you know, whether it's journal club or whatever other format, when you engage them in critiquing of the literature, whether it's research, scholarship, whatever, make sure they do it in a way that's also systematic. So for example, seek out critical appraisal tools. Right. So it's not just here's an article, kind of figure out the methods. No, like there are actual checklists. For example, one of which the AJPM focused journal has adopted as part of its own processes is what's called the Joanna Briggs Institute or JBI critical appraisal checklist, where, you know, each checklist is tailored to a particular research design. And those checklists are available for free online. You just type it in and you use them, you know, they're open access or I guess unrestricted license or whatever. And so use them. And it's not just JBI. There's the Cochrane collaboration has critical appraisal tools. There's other ones. There's one called the CAS tools. There's all kinds of tools. Try to get your residents to use these tools as part of any critiquing activity for the literature that they're doing, especially journal club, but also beyond. The one thing I will also mention is this is a bit of a new point, is what we've done also at Stony Brook is we do what's called population health rounds, which is a way we engage residents in research and scholarship in the sense of having them not just write about it, that's one thing, but we have them present their work regularly, right? So we have rounds weekly, and each week one resident will take the lead on a particular aspect of what we would call research and scholarship in preventive medicine. And we have an article about that. So if program directors want to review that, that could be a helpful tool as well. It's called the Population Health Rounds. If you Google that, that's the only article that will show up with that title. So whether it's discussing having the senior resident present a case in a scholarly way and communicate it, right? Because communication is not just about writing. There's also the verbal communication. That's one.
Yeah.
They might be present. The junior resident will present a topic related to the case. They also analyze data, whether it's an NHANES or some national data set or local data set, whichever. They analyze one aspect of it, but they start by asking a question and figure out, okay, how would I analyze the data to answer that question? And they do this weekly. And by doing that, again, we're systematizing their ability to approach clinical care and to approach data analysis and population health thinking, right? So the overall theme is systematize whatever you're trying to do, get a system going and implement it. Don't rely on the resident to kind of figure it out, or don't rely on the MPH program to just help your resident figure it out. You as a program, you have to add a system to it.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Jot, thank you so much for the time today. Really appreciate all the kind of insight and experience and guidance. This is super helpful.
It was a pleasure.